services finance, but we'll move along anyway. We do have a quorum. Representative Nornis will move the minutes of the last meeting.
They're very nice. Yes.
Any discussion on those? Seeing none, all those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? That's carried. I'm going to move this bill forward. And what is the House file number on this bill?
607.
I'm going to move House File 607 in front of us. It's our intention to simply lay it over. And I have one, at the request of the governor's office, one very small amendment on page 9, line 13. Strike the word township. It's not Moorhead Township. Any discussion on that amendment?
Mr. Chair, would you repeat that?
Page 9, line 13, the word township, strike that. Unless the mayor of Moorhead's done something in the last few weeks that we're not aware of.
Mr. Chairman, I would ask you to do that, to make that change.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? That's carried. Okay, if those folks that are speaking on behalf of the governor's office or the administration would like to come up and tell us what this bill does. Oh, and we will introduce her to Carly?
Yeah.
Okay.
13.
Just before you start, we do have a new member we're going to introduce as soon as she sits down. Members, we do have a new member, Carly Moline, and she's from
Hibbing,
and she replaced Representative Sertich, so I think we have a vast improvement here. You could just give us a little blip of what you do and why on earth did you want to do this?
Sure. I'm a Hibbing native. I was an attorney for the state of Minnesota on the Iron Range. I returned there after finishing law school, and I had the opportunity to work for Sertich while he was majority leader, so I've always been interested in getting into the legislative end of things, so I'm glad to be here.
Good. Representative Hausman.
And Mr. Chair, I think she needs to understand how rare it is for a new member to be joining us nearly the end of February and have missed only one meeting so far.
Well, Representative Hausman, we're trying to be more efficient. I think it will get busier as time goes on. Well, whichever one of you are going to go first, please introduce yourself for the tape and proceed.
Mr. Chair, thank you very much. For the record, my name is Jim Showalter, Commissioner of Minnesota Management and Budget. With me is Kristen Hansen, Assistant Commissioner for Debt Management and Treasury. I want to make sure that we have an opportunity to introduce her as well. I think many of the members in the committee know her, but she is a key role for this group. She manages all of the debt financing work for the state, helps to sort out some of the questions about what is eligible, uses for general obligation bond proceeds and other things. And we will be happy to provide an introduction to the governor's recommendations.
Then proceed.
I am trying also, just for kicks, in case somebody can rescue my incompetence, at getting the slide deck from the laptop to the overhead.
Someone's coming.
Help is on its way.
It worked amazingly. They couldn't get it going. Maybe it was during the presentation.
Mr. Chairman, doing better than they did in Ways and Means the other day. They weren't able to get it going.
I know. Mr. Chair, we seem to be cursed, but there seems to be something on the screen, so we'll go with that.
Okay.
First slide here is just really an overview of the governor's budget, capital budget recommendations. He introduced the budget in an attempt to really spur some job creation. He's looking at ways to improve and create necessary jobs in the construction and trades area and focus the bonding proceeds on infrastructure development. So that's going to be one of the themes that you're going to see throughout this. As a result of the notion about jobs and trying to echo some of the needs to get things going right away, He looked at many of the projects with regard to how ready are they for proceeding. So in the bill that you're carrying, there's a lot of asset preservation, a lot of renovation projects that have already been in the pipeline or have been requested, and agencies know how to manage those resources. The bill also includes some very critical elements. Coon Rapids Dam, I think, was in the Star Tribune just today, creating a barrier so that invasive species don't get further into Minnesota, trying to get that money lined up right now. Putting forward a new money for flood prevention. With all the snow that's all around, one of these days we're going to be talking about floods. Try to get some of that work going right now. With that overview, there's, I think, an urgency and a level of consideration of projects that have already been discussed in many instances here in the Capital Investment Committee. Altogether, the governor's recommendations total a little over $500 million. The invitation that he basically put forth to legislative leaders was that he would make a recommendation of around $500 million. If there were other priorities, additional priorities, then obviously those could be added to that. He would respect sort of the right and anticipate that there'd be some kind of trade-off from that perspective, that legislative priorities might be in addition or above what his own recommendations were. On the second slide, you see how his recommendations break out. In higher education, you see $194 million, about 36% of the overall total. A lot of that is in the areas of asset preservation, but there's also some key projects that are available in later slides. Economic development, a number of other projects that are scattered throughout the state, totaling $109 million. You see the breakdown here. For people who are new to the capital investment area, I want to also point out that what we're talking about generally is projects that are funded with what we know talk about as general obligation, general funded bonds. Those, the debt service for that, and Kristen can go into that more detail if you want more discussion of it, but the support and the payment of those bonds comes out of the general fund. It is part of the budget that we talk about on the operating side, and the debt service is really a pretty much a given as part of our forecast of state obligations. There are additional types of obligations and projects that are funded both in this bill and generally. Sometimes they're with cash. Sometimes they're with trunk highway funds. And those trunk highway bonds are also general obligation bonds, but they're funded out of the trunk highway fund. So they have a separate payback mechanism. And so that's just to distinguish something that you'll bump into as we keep on going into the future. I'll just roll through these next slides very quickly, but just to give you a notion of some of the projects that are included in here, here's the higher education slide. Minsky has quite a few projects included in this proposal as well. I should say that as we started building this proposal, one of the first lists of proposals that we looked at were some of the items that were vetoed in the past session. Not all of those are in this set of recommendations, but certainly those were given consideration. Transportation and transit, you'll see here a number of projects, including local bridges, local roads, as well as some critical Met Council transit improvements. In public safety area, there's quite a need for asset preservation and improvements in some of our correctional facilities, as well as just the growing populations through the MSOP, the Minnesota Sex Offender Program. Flood mitigation, natural resources. Here's another list of some of the projects that are here. I mentioned flood mitigation, other projects that are here. We can certainly, and I think the subsequent speakers will talk about some of these projects in greater detail. Same thing for the economic development. We've got key projects here in Rochester and St. Paul, Bloomington, a number of different places. I think we've got a number of speakers, but the notion here, again, is that some of these projects are ready to go. They will spur regional and statewide activities. In human services, vets, and military, I mentioned some of the DHS facilities across the state. We have some asset preservation here, as well as some necessary asset preservation in the vets' homes and other military facilities statewide. Overall, there's a couple of other areas that have funding here, including asset preservation. in a number of different agencies. Asset preservation is really generally managed by the agency that has the assets, though the Department of Administration has an overall pool that tries to be flexible in dealing with things as well. There's $15 million in here as well to upgrade some of the data centers. Those of you who have worked on state government committees or in the technology area know that the state's data centers are in a very dire need right now. And the past administration started a plan to move those and co-locate those in some of the better facilities that we have. This would accelerate that process by bringing those up to higher standards so that we could get more capacity in those places and start to hopefully co-locate and ultimately streamline some of those operations. So all in all, there's the documents related to the governor's recommendations are online for Minnesota Management and Budget. And Kristen and I can answer any overview questions that you might like, Mr. Chair. Otherwise, I would be happy to turn it over to some of the other testifiers.
I do have one question. The Central Corridor, $12.5 million. Now, I've read somewhere, and I can't tell you specifically where I read it, but something to do with the money that we were going to get from the federal government has been trimmed 30% to 50%. Do you know anything about that?
Mr. Chair, I think you're talking about at least some of the questions that are going on in Congress about discretionary programs or some of the resolutions that are bandied about. At this point, I don't know of anything that's actionable. I am sure that if anybody from the Met Council is here, they could speak to that, but I certainly haven't heard anything definitive like the Central Corridor funding, federal funding, is definitely changed. I've heard nothing to that effect.
Well, Mr. Showalter, if you do hear or if you could check, my question would be, how will that affect what we have to put forward if the federal government backsteps on this?
Absolutely. If something to that nature did occur, we would all very quickly have to talk about how do we continue with this project, what are the options, and we would certainly get back to you. Okay.
Representative Carlson.
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, the flood mitigation at $28 million and all the reports that we're getting where there's going to be flooding literally all over the state, could you explain if there's a priority list or what the criteria might be to determine where you're going to deal with the mitigation?
Mr. Scholl.
Mr. Chair, Representative, the Department of Natural Resources can certainly talk at greater length to how they prioritize these projects, but what is recommended here are a number of projects that they've been preparing and are ready to go in this area. Flood mitigation has been an area of study and trying to find ways to address this over a course of years. So, yes, this is an existing list. It's an existing set of prioritizations that the governor is working from.
Okay. Perhaps, Mr. Chairman, they can share that with us then. You've probably heard the same news reports that I have that the projection for flooding is just literally almost every corner of the state. So,
well, Representative Carlson, it's very possible that what we have here is a down payment.
That could be.
Yeah.
Okay.
Representative
Hanson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And on that point, I was with the governor this morning in South St. Paul. We had a meeting with almost all of our local officials there talking about the levee in South St. Paul and a pumping station that needs to be replaced. And there was some discussion, and my question to the commissioner is, so things like this that come up, the Army Corps had not certified or has not had an approval for that levee. So we've got a new situation that's somewhat of an emergency. And the governor indicated that, well, he's got half of what he and the legislature is supposed to fill the other half. And how would that occur? So do we, if we have an emergency, something like this that could add it in that doesn't fit in the traditional flood mitigation, what is our responsibility then? And maybe this is to the chair, if something like this comes up that may fit into some needs that are relatively quick.
Well, Representative Hanson, if it does come that it's an emergency and the state feels an obligation to chip in, then I don't believe the governor would oppose us raising that $28 million.
Mr. Showalter continue or bring someone else that you wanted to help push your idea.
Very good.
We'll move right to Commissioner McLaughlin if he's close by. Wasn't close enough. So he's got his thing set up. Huh?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Did you need a PowerPoint?
Yes, they're working on it right now.
Okay.
Would you...
Then identify yourself for the tape and talk real slow until they get it
finished. Okay, very good, Mr. Chairman. My name is Peter McLaughlin. I am Hennepin County Commissioner, and I'm here today advocating for a project that was included in the governor's budget, the transportation, the LRT improvements at the downtown Minneapolis transportation interchange, which is the point where North Star and Hiawatha currently come together. It is the point where Central Corridor trains will arrive in the fall of 2014. There are currently 250 rail operations per day at that location, and when Central Corridor arrives in fall of 2014, there will be 500 rail operations each and every day. And the request is for improvements to the LRT because the numbers of people coming to the ball games and using that station have far exceeded what the original estimates were. They're 60% and 70% over the estimates that were originally made for the number of people using the train. It is a safety issue and a capacity issue currently, and that will get significantly worse when Central Corridor opens up, and that opens up the entire east side to light rail transit. What we have seen in the at the ball games is originally the predictions were that about 15% of the attendees at the ball games would come by transit, and we're in excess of 20% already. If you layer on Central Corridor on top of that, you'll have a situation that will require some significant fixing, and that's what we're proposing to do. And the proposal, Mr. Chairman and members, I can pass out this material in the absence of the slideshow, Mr. Chairman. Pictures on here show the crowds that are currently waiting in line for the train. The one in the upper right here, that's the line you wait for to get in the train. Then this line over here wraps all the way down from 5th Street to 7th Street along the edge of the ballpark. And that's the, you wait in this line to then wait in this line to get on the train. And so the picture that you see here is a depiction of the safety concerns that people are crossing a live rail line there. Both the Twins and the Metro Transit have to add additional staff in order to manage those crowds. The proposal, Mr. Chairman, is on the back of that page. And the proposal here is to create a second platform to serve Central Corridor when it arrives. If you look at the diagram, the current platform is right here, about the center of the, just to the right of where that train is right now. The proposal is to create a second platform beyond the first one, and then you would have the Hiawatha customers going to the first platform, the Central customers going to the second platform, and then you create a plaza here, an extension of the current promenade that will then allow the crowd to queue in a safe manner. It would eliminate the crossing of the live railroad tracks by the right at the ballpark by the customers and the people trying to get to toward the river in that neighborhood of Minneapolis. And so that is the proposal, Mr. Chairman. We were pleased that it was in the governor's budget. Our request was for $20 million. The governor's request for total transit projects was $12.5 million. And so that's the scope of our request. I've included this is the annual report from the Minnesota Ballpark Authority, and they included their marketing in conjunction with the Twins and Metro Transit was called Destination Target Field, and they were very successful. This is a high-quality problem to have. Lots of people using transit. And so they described the success that they've had, and then they have included the interchange project as something that they need for the future in order to allow that the ballpark and allow the facility to operate well. Again, this is the place where two lines come together today. Central will be a third line, and we're trying to design this that in the event other lines are built, that they'll be able to plug into this facility as well. So, Mr. Chairman, I'd be happy to stand for questions. This has been endorsed by the Hennepin County Regional Railroad Authority and the county's Transit Improvement Board.
Representative Lanning.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Commissioner, you had indicated your request is $20 million and the governor has put $12.5 million. What is the total cost of this project?
Mr. Chairman and Representative Lanning, the project cost, and we are in the environmental review stage. The environmental review, our estimates are now that it's from $65 to $80 million total, and we have identified other sources of funding for in the total of about $20 million already, and we're looking at federal funds, private investments. We're looking at potentially there's some interest in parking underneath the plaza, which would then be a way to defray the costs of building the superstructure underneath the plaza. But it's approximately $65 to $80 million, depending on what the final design is based on the environmental review that's going on.
Representative Lenny.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As I'm sure you understand, Commissioner, that we would need to see a plan for how the total amount is going to be paid for before we actually would put a specific number in a proposal here.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, the reason we're here right now, and it's Mr. Chairman and Representative Lanning, is that in order to, our goal is to have this, and Met Council's goal is to have this project up and operating when Central Corridor opens up. If we wait until there are two light rail lines in operation, it will be more costly and more disruptive to build this additional platform and plaza. And so the reason we're here today making the request for this year's bonding bill is in order to get that done by the fall of 2014, which is when Central Corridor is scheduled to open, we need to be moving forward. We want to begin demolishing buildings this fall and to begin with the soil fix-up this fall potentially and then real construction next year. So that's the goal, the timeline of the project, and we are cobbling together the money as we move forward. And that's, we've cobbled together $20 million so far. We have this request for $20 million, and then we're looking at federal sources. We have to go through a procurement for the parking. If somebody's going to invest in parking, get this parking facility underneath, we have to go through a competitive process for that. So I can't name how much revenue that's going to produce. So we're putting that together as we speak. But there is a timeline here, a very strict timeline, because we want to get this open in time for Central opening up. Otherwise, it's going to cost more to do it eventually.
Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Commissioner, my question is, have you talked to the Twins about contributing to this project?
Commissioner.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Scott, there have been some preliminary discussions with the Twins about that. They're very supportive of the project. They haven't opened their checkbook yet. This is a project that is important to the entire region. It's going to, in terms of how Central Corridor works and in terms of how North Star works together with these other lines. And so we'll have those discussions with the Twins, but they haven't made a financial commitment yet. As you know, you may know, in and around the ballpark, there have been the Target Corporation made a major contribution to the plaza on the east side of the ballpark, $4.5 million. So there have been some private contributions in and around the ballpark already, and so we'd be exploring that as well.
Commissioner, it's my understanding that the Twins invested $3 million in this portion that affects how the people move off of the light rail into the stadium area.
Mr. Chairman, that building, that little pillbox shaped structure there that's on the western edge of the ballpark, it's right here, that is the vertical circulation building. It's where you have the stairs, the elevators, and the escalators that take you from this plaza level, the existing plaza that's there now, and the LRT platform down to the North Star platform. And the Twins contributed. They actually built that entire, they financed the construction of that entire facility. So they've actually contributed to the transit system in this area already.
Oh, Representative Duskowski?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I was trying to follow your sharing of those numbers. And as a follow-up to Representative Lanning, your request is for 20. The governor has put 12.5, and then you referenced 80 million. And I was trying to get a feel for then what happens to the plaza here if it's the governor's number at 12.5. Would you be attempting to make that up to get to 20, or would you scale a project back? And maybe in the end here, because you're throwing out kind of numbers and concept, you could provide us with some printed information in terms of how you get to that 80 million. But it appears that, at least with your concept design here, that's based on 20 million, is what I assume.
Commissioner.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Carlson, we have done preliminary runs of numbers based on some original designs. We are now in the environmental review process, and there have been some changes that have been proposed which could well reduce the cost. And so we don't have a hard fixed number yet for the total cost of the project. So we're working on those as we land on a final design, and our hope is to do that final concept, we hope to have that within a couple months, at which point we then would send it over to get some hard construction bids, and then we would have those nailed down. On the money side of it, the governor's recommendation was for $12.5 million for three transit projects, actually. There was a park and ride in Hastings, I believe. Newport, I'm sorry, thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Hausman. In Newport, that was approximately $500,000. There's a North Star station in the city of Ramsey at approximately $4 million. So the balance, the governor's recommendation could be, by doing the math, is $8 million.
Okay. Well, that's, Mr. Chairman, helpful. I was assuming that 12.5 was for this project. From the testimony, so you really have, if it does come in for the plaza at 20 million, then quite a shortfall in terms of what might potentially be needed. To either be made up by the various funding sources that you were talking about, parking, and if there are other private contributions of some sort or other entities. But your total of 80 million includes the plaza, at least in your preliminary conversations, then at 20 million. Am I correct on that? Understanding it's preliminary, and I understand.
65 to 80. 80 is the high end.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Carlson. So the 80 is the high end. We're going to be doing one, we're doing redesign now based on the environmental review, and then we'll do the value engineering and those. And then we're going to be cobbling together the funding sources that are necessary. What's driving us, though, is this deadline of trying to get this thing built before Central Corridor opens up, because it's going to cost more to build it if we have to build it with two lines up and operating, not just one. So that's why we're pressing ahead here. The county has committed funding to this. As I said, we're in negotiations with the private interests about parking. There'll be discussions potentially about private donations and the like. And so we're trying to cobble it together. And there's potential federal funding. I mean, there are a variety of federal sources that we could use. And the environmental review in which we're currently engaged is designed specifically to meet the requirements of for federal funding. So that's why we're that environmental review is going on right now, so we can compete for federal funds.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Commissioner. Commissioner, looking at the handout you provided, and you know we've got the Hiawatha line there, and people are congregating around for a ride that is subsidized at a rate of 56% of the operating cost by the taxpayers. That line's bleeding money profusely, and we're looking at building onto it. Is this going to help us stop the bleeding of that existing line or only create another wound for taxpayers in Minnesota?
Commissioner, you feel free to answer that. You don't have to go into detail. We're going to have to speed it up just a little bit because a lot of people have want to talk today. So,
The short answer, Mr. Chairman,
yes.
Thank you. The short answer is that by building this additional platform, it will provide for more ridership. It would be the estimate because it'll be easier to get onto both trains, and so we'll be able to move more people, and there'll be people paying the fare, and therefore it ought to reduce the subsidy by having more customers using the existing trains.
Representative Hausman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's not my question, but just a follow-up. I believe I have this correct. The Hiawatha Light Rail Transit is the least subsidized of all of our transit corridors, including Metro Transit. Isn't that correct,
Commissioner?
Mr. Chairman, I'm not. I can't quote all the bus lines, but I mean in terms of the transitway lines that we have, it is operating with the least subsidy of any of those transitway lines. Yes.
And Mr. Chair, and mine is maybe not a question as much of an observation. I think it would be fair to say that those of us who care about this particular line in the bonding bill would suggest that it probably doesn't have sufficient dollars for what CTIB at one point might have hoped would happen this year. So when we're trying to figure out how we're going to spread that $12 million to cover all the needs, it really, frankly, doesn't. I saw the original request that came from CTIB, and it was for significantly more than this.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hausman, that's correct.
Representative Bills.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Commissioner McLaughlin, in your mind, how much of this is driven by twins ridership or recreational ridership and then weekly ridership? Is it a 50-50 split, an 80-20 split? What do you perceive?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, this is driven by the need to have, we've got this coming together of all these lines. And so we need to, Southwest will be coming in here if and when that is built as well. And so we're trying to design this and build it out so that it can accommodate all of those users. A lot of this is coming from the Twins, the ball game. And the Minnesota Ballpark Authority has already contributed $1.5 million out of its infrastructure funds for infrastructure in and around the ballpark. They've already contributed $1.5 million. The last $1.5 million available under its $90 million infrastructure cap to this project, in directly to respond to the concern that I think you're raising. And so they recognize that, and they put their last $1.5 million that they had available into this project.
Representative Bills.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Hausman.
But it would be helpful for members to know that you, Transportation Committee members know this, but 40% of the employees in downtown Minneapolis arrive there by transit, 40%. So that's the weekday.
Mr. Chairman, the North Star trains, when they come in, they have large numbers of people on those trains. I mean, It's five cars long. So when they come in, this is going to be helpful each and every day for each and every North Star train to sort out where the people should go. They'll be assigned to Hiawatha platform. They'll be assigned to the Central Corridor platform. That'll be an improvement. It'll help the movement there, as well as helping to guide people from the many buses that actually come into this area as well.
Thank you, Commissioner.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman.
We're going to bring the two engineers up from Marshall and Clay County.
I apologize about the power.
Sorry.
The amount I have in mind.
also, when we sent $4 million, Jimmy and I have not proved it. Because it does not do those reasons. So it just seems like
and I didn't,
I don't even
and I was concerned about you got from 25 to 20, yeah. Only to find out that
welcome to the committee and identify yourself and go ahead. We're going to compress how much yep. time everybody has,
because right.
obviously this will take a while.
Thank you. My name is Lon Oney. I'm with Marshall County, up in the northwestern part of the state. And with me is Dave Overbow with Clay County. We're going to share a couple different things with you, but I'm going to turn it over to Dave right away to get started, and we'll try to streamline this as much as we can for you.
As Lon said, I'm Dave Overbow with Clay County in Moorhead, Minnesota. We've got a couple things we'd like to talk about today. First thing we'll touch on a little bit is be our 10-ton roadway network as it applies to roads of regional significance and flooding, and then Lon will follow up with the flooding issue and some information on bridges. Agriculture is very vital to Clay County as well as the rest of the state of Minnesota. That's basically where our jobs are at. I think you've got some information that we passed around as far as a chart that shows the total tons of product being produced in the state. It's also being hauled on our roadways in great numbers. As you can see, six of the top 10 counties for total tons produced are located in the northwest quarter of the state. Personally, in Clay County, being one of the nation's highest producers of sugar beets, our roadways are rough, aged, and falling apart. The conceptual 10-ton network is bursting at the seams. The county roadway system is no longer meeting the needs of the businesses and freight haulers in our state. In Clay County alone, I've shown on a map, and I hope you've all received that map, we've got over 50 miles highlighted there of regionally significant roadways that we have no funds to make the necessary upgrades. These roads are adjacent to a American Crystal sugar beet factory. We've got a lot of gravel quarries coming from Becker County all the way across Clay County into the city of Fargo and Moorhead. We've got agriculture dealerships, commercial asphalt plants, and they all need good 10-ton networks to conduct their business. As you have spoken about today, our system is aged. Our residences, our citizens are needing good roads to get to and from the schools, to the businesses that they work in. More and more people are moving out in the outskirt areas of the counties, and a transportation system is very vital, I think, to everybody in the state.
Again, my name is Lon Oney. I'm with Marshall County, and as also on that list, you'll see that a lot of those ag-producing counties are neighboring the Red River, and there's other counties, obviously, Minnesota River and the Mississippi River that probably will be experiencing flooding again this year. A couple things that are just interesting for us is in Marshall County, we've had 16 floods of history that have exceeded major flooding. 11 of those floods have occurred since 1990. So it's not just something that's happened just once or twice. This is a reoccurring thing that we deal with every year. Or not every year, but quite often. The other thing that's really interesting about that is that the city of Oslo is a small community up in our county. They have been basically isolated 5 years out of that since the 1997 flooding. That means no access other than by boat. And we're in a non-lake area. We don't need boats, but people have boats up there for that transportation purpose. There's a picture in front of you, I think that's in that file, that shows a gravel roadway. Now, it's a low-volume roadway, but at the time that the flooding occurs, this roadway is significant in the sense that it provides access for people from our area to go across the Red River over to Drayton, North Dakota, to go to work at the beef plants or different facilities over in that area. You can see that road's a little bit difficult to pass at this point in time. What happens is once that road is closed, people have to get in their boats, go 3 to 4 miles by boat to where they have their cars parked, travel approximately 70 miles round trip to get to that same place that's right across the river. Or they run the risk and take the boat across the river that has cold flowing water, ice, and different things like that. So, I mean, you can see it's not a good situation to be doing that. And what we're getting at with a lot of this is that funding through this bonding bill would be very helpful in the local road improvement programs, flood mitigation, and what it would do is it would help us to have to minimize these excessive costs that we have for the reoccurring repairs. Those pictures that you have in front of you, that's about $100,000 to $150,000 repair, which we've done 3 times in the last 5 years.
So it's something that's it does add up, and if we could do something through flood mitigation, it would be very helpful to be able to do that. Whether it be just some minor cleanup after a flood, that's what we'd be looking at. So I guess in closing, what we'd like to do is just to indicate that we do appreciate the fact that roads are being looked at, both from the governor's standpoint as well as a bipartisan standpoint, and that for your information, we can provide the information that the money that's indicated in the proposed in the bill at this point, or the proposed bill, would be easily spent with projects that are already on a list. They're projects that are shovel-ready for 2011, and they're projects that will could happen if the funds were available to do that. The other thing that we could provide, too, is a list of more projects that would be available if those dollars were to be, you know, increased in that situation. So I'd like to thank you for your time and just appreciate what you being able to sit and listen to us. So
I have two quick questions for
you.
Yes,
sir.
Is this a county road?
Yes. It's a county state aid highway, or county state aid road. So it's on the CASA system.
My second question is local road improvements or grants,
yep,
as we call them. It's my understanding that townships are allowed to apply for this money also, but they usually get left out of the mix because they don't have the staff that you guys have. And when they call and when they inquire, the money's already spoken for. Would you have a problem if this committee would put language in a bill that said at least 15% or 20% went to townships?
I guess I haven't really considered that at this point. I don't.
Would you consider that?
I would consider it. We have townships that need to be helped out.
Okay. Many of the counties, including Clay County, we do township maintenance for the township. So, it would help us as well. It would make our life a little easier. If there were some problem areas that there could be some funding to help them out, it would make our maintenance issues a lot easier as well.
Representative Scalzi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess I have a question I missed a little bit about. You do repair these roads and then you have to repair them again. And I'm wondering if it's good money after bad. So maybe you could answer that question, how often you repair these roads. And then the other part of the question would be, would it make more sense to do a little flood prevention, redoing some of the wetland areas, some of the rim money, rather than continually flooding and repairing the infrastructure that's damaged by the flooding?
Whichever one of you would like.
Mr. Chairman, the pictures that you have in front of you, that is that shows the road after probably a good period of time after the flooding has gone down or the water has gone down. That road is totally submerged, so I'm not sure if there's any form of prevention that could be done. Getting into a different subject, but storage, things of that nature would be beneficial, but with the magnitude that we see, I don't know if that would be the sole answer for that situation. The road that you're looking at right there, we have repaired that three of the last 5 years, and it's, like I said, it's about $100,000 to $150,000 fix. That road is some people's lifeline because that gets to their land that they have to farm, that they take care of, and there's no other access for them other than that road. So the road has to be there is what ends up happening. So that.
Representative Hanson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If you're going to break the seal on going into township roads, I'm sure that plenty of our cities, there's people that drive on city streets that have to get to work, and we'd certainly could get you some bills for city street repairs if that's needed as a result of flooding. We'd be happy to work on that if you choose to go down the township road route.
Representative Hanson, I live in a township.
Well, Mr. Chair, and I live on a city. Live in the city, so we'd be happy to, I'm sure many of the cities that experience flooding with streets that are not county or state aid issues, if we go into that local funding, it's a big, big new world.
It is a new world. Thank you very much. Is Mr. Goodnow here? Mr. Mr. Goodnow, I sat on your committee for 2 years, and you told me no many times, so this is really a thrill for me.
So, Mr. Chairman, that's why you called me down early. I appreciate it.
Yes. Go ahead and introduce yourself for those of us that don't know who you are.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Kevin Goodnow, and I'm a lobbyist representing the city of Moorhead. You should have had a letter distributed in your packet from the city of Moorhead, the mayor of Foxland. He sends his apologies for not being able to be here today. City of Moorhead is actually preparing for its third major flood event in the last few years. They are currently holding public hearings, public meetings up in Moorhead to discuss their preparation along with the citizens. And they're actually going to start active efforts next Monday and starting to pre-fill sandbags for the efforts this year. The reason I'm here is to speak in favor of the flood mitigation dollars that are included in the governor's bonding proposal of $28 million and the specific inclusion of Moorhead, not Moorhead Township, in the bill as well. So we appreciate that earlier action. The whole idea behind the flood mitigation dollars is to remove properties that are impacted by floods on a regular basis. And the net of impact is to reduce the cost of the emergency response that needs to take place every year. And so this will allow for faster, more efficient, and less costly response efforts when the floods are threatening and coming in. And that's how these dollars are to be spent. And we appreciate the governor's efforts in putting it forward in his proposal, and we would appreciate your support as flood mitigation dollars move forward. Just wanted to note that the total amount that the city is requesting this year is $12 million. That will be the final amount that's needed to complete their flood mitigation project that they've started over 3 years ago. Overall, the project is expected to spend close to $50 million, and this is the last $12 million that we need in order to finish that project.
Representative Rukavina.
Sure, I live in the township.
Yeah, we'll take care of the townships first.
Maybe if Mr. Goodnow or Representative Lanning can help. How much have we given for the whole Red River area to collect the flood control over, say, the last decade? Do you know that figure?
Representative Lanning, you want to take that one on?
Well, over the last decade, I'd have to go back and look at some of the numbers. Mr. Lacosmo from DNR is here. He probably would know that off the top of his head. But in the last bonding bill, we had $63.5 million. And I believe the majority of that went to projects up in the northwest quadrant of the state of Minnesota. But Mr. Lacosmo could probably give you more historical information.
Well, maybe
Representative Rukavina.
I'm just curious, and Representative Lanning, Mr. Chair, are we safer now in areas like, say, in Moorhead proper, that we, because of the different dredging systems and whatever else we've done up there with that money, that it's not going to flood as much of the town, or there's
Representative Lanning.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Rukavina, the city of Moorhead and the area around us, Oakport Township to the north, is much more protected now than we were in 2009. The money that the state has provided in the last 2 years, along with what the city has committed, the city has committed over $8 million for this same project, and we have built additional levees, flood walls, the city's removed about 100 homes that were in harm's way, and the investment that the state and the city have made have really reduced the potential flood damage costs the state and the federal government has incurred, that the local government has incurred. And so, yes, we're making progress. This request is the last piece of the project that was started here a couple of years ago.
Representative Brooklyn. For the Moorhead area?
Yes, this request would be the finish the project for the Moorhead area. And down the road, we still have the issue of long-term potential of a floodway around the metropolitan area. And Winnipeg has a floodway. If any of you have ever been to Winnipeg, you've seen that floodway has protected that city many times. In fact, after the 97 flood, Manitoba and the Canadian government spent another $1 billion enhancing that floodway. And the city and the county, and along with North Dakota and City of Fargo, are continuing to work with the Corps of Engineers on a long-term solution, floodway solution that would take many years to put in place. And 90% of the local costs that would be required would be paid by the state of North Dakota and the City of Fargo, and only 10% would have to come from Minnesota or our local city and county. But that's a long-term project, and there's a long ways to go before that's made a reality. Thank you for the question, Representative Rukavina.
Thank you, Mr. Goodnow. I don't see any other questions, but would you tell Mr. Lacasmo on your way up to provide us that question? That
I will do that, Mr. Chair. Thank you very much. Members
of the committee. Mr. Lacasmo, wherever he is, the whole mix of, you don't have to come down. The DNR guys get paid enough. But, if we could see the whole mix, like what John Lanning was referring to, what Morehead's putting in North Dakota.
I'm sure he'll supply that to us.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative.
Yeah, if I could just add one more comment, especially as it relates to the diversion, but really with regard to all of these efforts. We're working, continue to work very hard to support more retention projects, wetland restoration, using natural holding areas, and other projects, and that's got to be a part of all of this as well. We can't just build levees and flood walls and floodways. We have to retain more water on the land.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. City of Rochester and St. Cloud, you're on deck.
Good afternoon, Chairman.
Introduce yourself for the tape and compress it as much as you can.
Okay. Chairman House, members of the committee, I'm Gary Newman. I work for the City of Rochester. We're thankful the Mayo Civic Center expansion project is in this proposal. We want to expand and renovate the Civic Center to help the city capture a portion of a growing niche of conventions for healthcare, biotechnology, high-tech and similar markets. There's a lot of events that would come to Rochester if we upgrade this facility because of the presence of Mayo Clinic, Minnesota Partnership for Biotechnology and Medical Genomics, and IBM. Many of these events will be national and international in nature and will help generate much-needed revenue for Minnesota from out-of-state visitors. In 2008, the Mayo Civic Center lost 68 regional and national events that we may have attended because the quality of the facility and the size of the facility weren't adequate for those conferences. In the short term, the project will put 400 construction workers on the job. That's 200 jobs a year times 2 years of construction, and we believe would create 800 permanent jobs in the hospitality industry, which after healthcare is the second largest employment sector in Rochester. We have 11,000 people employed in the hospitality industry. We have over 5,200 hotel rooms, which I think may be second in Minnesota. A lot of those rooms are available on weekends, so we'd like to attract people for economic development reasons. We estimate the Civic Center expansion will generate an additional $44 million annually in economic impact for our region. And lastly, the project is ready to go. We had a state-funded grant of $3.5 million in 2009, and the plans and specifications for the project were complete in late 2010 and are now on the shelf waiting for other funds to start the project. So that's it, Mr. Chairman.
You must have done well. There's no questions. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Introduce yourself for the tape, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Dave Kleiss, Mayor of the City of St. Cloud. With me also, Teresa Bonin, who is the President of the St. Cloud Area Chamber of Commerce. This project, the St. Cloud Civic Center expansion, I look around the room and see a lot of faces that should be very familiar with this project because it's been around here a long time. In fact, when I was in the Senate, I carried this bill a number of years ago, and at that time for some planning money, and it was vetoed by then Governor Ventura. But it's been around, and I always open up saying that this, you know, project I have changed the area chair has been around for 13 years. A project that has been needed. Studies have been done showing the need for the area for the expansion of the St. Cloud Civic Center. What we're in the proposal, we're looking for kind of a little bit of history recently, I guess recent history. In 2008, the legislature appropriated and the governor signed $2 million to be matched with $2 million locally from our food and beverage tax. So it was $4 million was committed to design, preparation, site acquisition. With those dollars from the 2008 legislature, we took, we acquired some land, demolished some buildings, and prepared the land, or prepared the site, anticipating that was phase one of the Civic Center that were authorized to do, anticipating to come back with the remainder of it, phase two, to complete that. We did come back. In fact, we were in the bill in 2009 that was vetoed, and we were in the bill that passed the legislature in 2010 that was vetoed. So we had passed the legislature. Those requests were for $15 million. The actual bill last year was scaled back by the legislature to $13 million. Last year, we had to make a decision as a city. Because we had, with the previous bonding dollars, bought a building, tore down a building, and prepared for phase two. So we had an empty lot. We had to make a decision based on the economy, based on the need for this facility. We, as a city, looked at, had our folks look at what we could bond for, what we could go forward with on our own. We were able to because of, and that was the argument that we made all those years, that because of the bonding climate, because of the interest rates, this is the best time to bond, which we also feel very strongly about this year, too, and that's why we're advocating for a bonding bill and advocating for this project. We felt very strongly about that, so we had our folks put the pencil to paper. We bid it out, and because of the bidding climate, we were able to go through our phase, and this is kind of a little unorthodox on how bonding projects usually are. Usually we do the 50-50 match, and that's actually what's in the proposal, 50-50 match, but we felt we had to do our match in order for us taking advantage of the climate, so we bid it out. We were able to, with a 25-year, going out 25 years, we were actually got our interest rate of 3.18. In fact, I just had our folks run the numbers. By doing it last year, instead of waiting this year, we saved $5 million. By just doing that 1 year. $5 million in interest by doing the bonding last year by going forward. Also, because of the construction climate, which was absolutely wonderful for us, we were able to do $22 million, again, on our share because of the construction climate, which is 60% of the project now rather than the 50-50 match we were looking at before. It's still a complete project. When we went forward with this last year, we were still under the auspices of coming back and finishing that partnership with the state, and that's why we went forward with our section of it. So what we're asking for is to complete the project. This is a project that will add 270 jobs, and I always, when I say jobs in that, that's jobs that our study has shown, private sector jobs. We're expanding this facility. We're not adding any staff to the facility. So we're adding 35,000 square feet of floor space, but we're not adding any people to it. We've cut down our staff considerably over the last few years from the city's perspective. So we've reined in our budget really hard, but this is a 75% increase in economic activity for central Minnesota, the St. Cloud area, a project that's been, many of you are familiar with. And I want to turn it over to Teresa Bone. I know you're time restrained to talk about the business support. But I also want to say this is it's not just St. Cloud. It's a St. Cloud region. Six area cities have unanimously passed resolutions, and you know how that normally is in regional areas, have passed resolutions supporting this facility's expansion year after year, including this year, to go forward. So with that, I'll turn it over to Teresa Bowen, President of the Chamber of Commerce.
Representative Carlson.
Yeah, I have a question of the mayor, if I could. You know, when I hear the presentation of Rochester and now St. Cloud, individually there's a tendency to buy into the arguments and be supportive, and I've been supportive in the past. But I'd like the mayor to step back for a moment and look at it from the standpoint of statewide capacity, because we have Minneapolis, St. Paul, Duluth, You've got a smaller convention center now, but we've got requests in now for St. Cloud, Mankato, and Rochester. And so my question is, can we be assured, and maybe I should have asked this of Rochester as well, that we're not overbuilding? He made reference to 68 national and regional conventions that were turned down by Rochester because they didn't have the capacity. So on the face of that, it sounds like we have a need. But then if we're building, what, about 80 miles away in Mankato, and you're probably about 100 miles from Rochester and with Twin Cities in between. So if you could talk about overall capacity, and maybe somebody else might, Department of Tourism or something, could let us know what we really need on a statewide basis with convention centers.
Mr. Mayor.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Carlson, I can start, and then I'll have Teresa Bona in the chamber, who is also our convention and visitors bureau, can give you some of those. But I don't believe so. In fact, I think that they complement each other in a lot of ways. We've turned away conventions over the last several years that are on a rotation between Rochester and Minneapolis and Duluth and, you know, in regional centers. Mm-hmm. We've turned them away because they've outgrown our facilities. Their events have outgrown our city. We have businesses in our local area that have that do not have their conventions in the local area to sell their products because they've outgrown our facility. So I don't believe so. I believe they complement each other in that respect. In fact, we had when we started the expansion, our phones ran off the hook to book future conventions. And last year, prior to that, when the vetoes took place, every year we had folks who were very concerned about where they were. But I think they complement. But I'll let Teresa Bonin talk a little bit about from the CVB's perspective.
And I'm Teresa Bonin, president of the St. Cloud Area Chamber of Commerce, which represents 1,000 business members in central Minnesota. We also contract with our six area cities to be the fiscal agent, manage, and hire our CVB staff, and I'm the direct supervisor over that staff. We are already booking the space that'll be open in December of this year. In fact, I spoke with the Civic Center director yesterday, and they're booking it at a amazing rate. Our Central Minnesota Farm Show is in there right now. 4,000 farmers over the next 3 days out of Central Minnesota coming in. Because St. Cloud is in the center of the state, it's a natural draw for all kinds of state and regional conventions, but particularly state, because it's a much faster way for people north and south to come together than going to those other venues. So there is definitely a desire and a need in our area to meet the demand from the market that we're getting for this space, and it is filling at a very quick rate. Also, I just have to say that I've been at our chamber now for 13 years, and when I walked in the door, I started working on this project. And when this mayor came in, we decided we have to do something different with this, with a different approach. And in fact, I think since you've been in, we have been included in bonding bills and at the last minute have been taken out. So we really want to finish this project. Our business community wants to finish this project. Our board of directors met at the Civic Center yesterday and saw where the expansion is going. We have them and our business community working on filling that space. They're working directly with the Convention and Visitors Bureau to bring new groups and new associations that they're part of into our community. And it is just absolutely time to get it done. I hope that when it is done, all of you will come to St. Cloud and see it. I know that Representative Hausman has been there several times and seen it. It's the walls are going up. It's a really exciting thing, and we're ready to welcome the people into St. Cloud. The other thing is the development downtown directly related to the development of the Civic Center. It has really become an economic stimulus for our community. We're recovering at one of the quickest rates in the state, and we need this project finished so that we can again get that full economic value out of it.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, if I may, I think each convention center has a good story to tell, and it may be very appropriate to fund all of them. I guess the question I'm asking, if we step back to make sure that we don't, from a statewide perspective, overbill, because we do have three additional ones before us. And the Rochester folks had a good story. You have a good story. I've supported you, and I've visited the convention center along with Representative Hausman on at least a couple of occasions. So it's not due to a lack of support from my perspective. It's just to make sure that we have a proper balance in terms of what the need is so that we don't end up with a situation where we have, from a statewide perspective, overcapacity. And we may not be at that point. I just don't know. Thank you.
Respectfully, Chair and Representative Carlson, I would suggest, too, that with a look at that, to look at where those conventions prefer to meet, because there are definite advantages to some locations over others.
Thank you.
Representative Switz.
Mr. Chair, on this map, on this sheet, you said you're already kind of breaking some ground and putting some walls up. Could you point out to us what is being built currently, and then what the addition of funds would build or not build? Or
what, Mr. Chair and Representative Swedinsky, what we're basically, again, in the each year that we've been at this project, we're looking at completing phase two. So phase one was what the legislature appropriated, the $2 million plus the $2 million that we matched, $4 million for land acquisition, site preparation, demolition of a business. We moved to business with phase one to get to phase two. We came back for phase two. We were successful in a large part, but unfortunately was vetoed. We didn't get to finish that aspect of it. We decided to go with normally the case, our 50% or our portion. Most of these are all matched 50-50. We decided to go with our portion. So we look at it as the complete facility, finishing the facility off. I could point to walls or various parts of it, but this is completing the project. By having a complete project, you get the full benefit of the economic development aspect of it. Again, we're asking for $10.1 million. Our $22 million in the past, we've been asking for a 50-50, but we were able to, because of interest rates and the bidding climate. But we're looking at finishing it off. It would be some Mississippi River features. It'd be some wall enhancement. It'd be the parking facility. It'd be infrastructure around that that would enhance, finish the project off. Basically, we're asking to finish the project. Normally, the projects go with the bonding dollars and the communities come forward. We couldn't wait, and we're fortunate that we didn't wait in one aspect, because our taxpayers would be paying $5 million more over the life of this loan, just in the interest alone, plus the construction. And one of the critical aspects of finishing it off this year also, we estimate, by the fact that, there's always the term shovel-ready, you can't get much more shovel-ready than cranes and walls that are already up, so this is beyond shovel-ready. But the cost of waiting even a year in construction costs alone is $750,000, we estimate, just adding that in to a project. So there's a savings, the interest rates, all estimations are that the interest rates, our folks tell us that we hit their interest rates at the right time because they're still going up in those costs, the building construction costs. In the bidding climate we would be in, having folks that are actually on site already in a bidding process will save significant dollars finishing and completing the project. So we see it as a complete project, just finishing it off.
Thank you. Representative Rucavina. Go ahead.
Sure.
Hi, Mayor. How you doing? I see, in the last project where the Mayo Civic Center, I see my new neighbor, Wes Irvig, who bought some property for deer hunting just up the road from me. But he's down in the southeastern Minnesota building trades and construction trades down there, very active in the union, and I see that they're urging it. I'm assuming they have a project labor agreement, if I recall correctly. Do you have any kind of a project labor agreement with the building trades and construction workers?
We actually have we don't have an agreement in place. We have something a little unique in St. Cloud. We actually have a policy on construction projects. We have a prevailing wage, just even without state bonding dollars. We're in discussions with the folks. Throughout this process, the folks in the building trades, electricians, have been very supportive of the project going forward. We don't have one in place right now, but we're in that discussion.
Well,
Representative Rucavina.
Chair, Mayor, the fact that you're getting over $250,000, I think it was the prevailing wage on any agreement, regardless of whether you have an agreement or not. I mean, the papers that I was more curious as to, because you're claiming in here hundreds of construction jobs, and I was just hoping they were livable wages.
Yeah. We have, again, a city policy on that portion for prevailing wage and on the project, and we are. We look at the jobs and the hours that are in here, and they're local also. We've been fortunate. Of course, we bid like any other under the state bidding process, but most of the jobs have been coming from the area, and yes, they are livable wage jobs. Our policy alone is prevailing wage, even though
either way, it wouldn't matter. We had state bonding on the first part. The part that we're going forward on, we don't have at this point. We're hopeful that we'll have state bonding, but we're still, under our policy, still having the same policy that would, the prevailing wage that would be the Minnesota prevailing wage law if it was bonding dollars.
Well, Representative Rukavina. If you'd like, I can help you. I can work out a project.
Mr. Chair, Representative Rukavina, we can discuss. We have been in discussion, but we have no opposition to that.
Representative Hauser.
Because we're going to hear from Mankato and they're going to talk about the city's connection to the to their local college institution, it might be helpful for us to get a sense for how you see this impacting what we did a year or two ago, the $27 million for the hockey rink, which is, I think, St. Cloud State, and that, I believe, is an amateur sports facility site as well. Have you looked at that as a city in terms of the question here was, have we overbuilt as a state? The question with these two facilities is, what would be the impact in your city of building two facilities that are rather large gathering points?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hausman, actually we did look at that. In fact, that was the proposal when we came forward. Each year, it's always been a partnership. In fact, I recall 5 years ago when we were here, we with the university also supporting that expansion that they're doing, and will be underway next year. It's kind of the two bookends: the St. Cloud State University, their event center, the National Hockey Center renovation. They're renovating the facility and adding a lot of features to it. Our Civic Center, on the other end, also were two bookends to what was in between, what's called Fifth Avenue Live, which is $100 million. Private investment of construction that is underway. At least phase one is done. Phase one has already been completed. They're looking at other phases, phase two and phase three, which is a mixed-use retail office. Phase one was apartments, retail. The university actually put its welcome center, trying to connect a greater connection with the city. So we see them complementing each other. In fact, our folks throughout this whole process have been looking at where we can book events, both at the event center and the convention center, that are different. Convention center, what we're looking for is primarily conventions. The facility at the hockey center, not only sporting events but more concerts, a different type of venue that we wouldn't be able to do at the convention center. So they complement each other actually moving forward. So we're not overbuilding. Each part of this process that we've entered into over the last 5 years anyway has been in partnership with the university, looking at their facility so that we're not duplicating anything, but partnering with those two facilities.
Can I add something to that?
If you make it very
short. I will, very short. Thank you, Chair House. We also have, just seven blocks down the road from the Civic Center, $250 million hospital expansion project that's going on, the biggest in the state of Minnesota. And we also have our Lake George Park, which has just been completed through the Rotary Club and private investment, reconditioning and restructuring the entire Lake George Park. So it really is an entire community investment, and the public investments being made are definitely driving private investments, and I have those numbers, so thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
We're going to go Mankato, Bloomington, St. Paul.
Thank you. Thank you.
Please introduce yourself for the tape, and we are going to continue to. Right. I'm going to maybe cut some people off. So.
My name is Pat Hinches. I'm the Mankato City Manager. I'm here to speak about the Mankato Civic Center. Our project really involves two components. It's an expansion of our hockey facilities that we provide for Minnesota State University men's and women hockey. The project is involved their planning to upgrade our arena for the men's program and to upgrade the men's and women's hockey practice facility and women's arena. It involves $7 million worth of expenditures. We hope to have that project underway this year. The ideal period of time would be to construct that facility as soon as hockey season is completed, and basically it's all ready to go. The other part of the project involves the expansion of our event center which the men's program is there. We will make, if the funding is put in place, approximately about $23 million worth of improvements to the event center, additional breakout rooms, a 1,100-seat auditorium, and that involves land acquisition and the full construction costs associated with that. Additionally, we can have that project underway as soon as the bonds are issued and grant agreements are put in place, and we'd fully expect to have construction be able to begin this construction season. This project has been adjusted in a number of fashions through the various vetoes before this body and the Senate body, and of course the governor's veto in the past three bonding bills. We have at this $12 million match mark, we would take on more responsibility for the overall project. We likely will take out some theater components of our project, but nevertheless, we will be able to increase our capacity for that center. There was questions about kind of competition. Each one of us has different niches. I would say in our particular case, obviously, our partnership with Minnesota State University is a component that's very important for us. It has a lot of the economic performance of our center is hinges on that relationship. The other part of this is that we're an event center. Though we have convention business, we put on a number of ticketed events. This allows us a fair amount of capacity to have something happening. For example, our arena had Minnesota State hockey last week. There was a concert. I know a lot of you probably aren't speed metal folks, but in interest, but it was a ticket event, very heavily utilized. We had a convention in our center, and basically we could expand that capability for regional use of our center with this expansion. So we all have different niches in that event center, convention center, arena activity. I would want to note one other component. This obviously has major economic impact for Mankato. We expect about $27 million worth of additional business generated in the private sector, from the hospitality industry as such, from this expansion. We obviously have construction jobs, and there are a number of permanent jobs as a part of that private sector benefit from this that certainly are part of this. The other unique feature that we have is we are the only major event center, convention center, or arena for hockey that has not had participation by the state of Minnesota in terms of bonding participation. And though we are very grateful to the legislature in providing a local option sales tax that funded the original project, we have in place the authority to do this should the legislature provide that match. But again, this is really necessary to certainly preserve our relationship with Minnesota State and continue a very vital facility for our region.
Thank you.
Thank you.
If I'm not mistaken, there were one or two gentlemen that signed up late to say a few words about what you're going to talk about, and if they're still here, they certainly can if we still have time. So introduce yourself and go
Mr.
ahead.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, my name is Larry Lee. I'm the Director of Community Development for the City of Bloomington.
And I'm Shane Rudlang. I'm a senior civil engineer working for Bloomington's Port Authority.
And again, as much as you can compress what you thought you wanted to say today into a little bit smaller.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, we're ready to put the Lindau Lane project into a nutshell for you here today. We're presenting from paper, and I assume that you have a copy of the paper presentation in front of you. The first diagram is a map that shows you where the South Loop project is in the city of Bloomington. It is a key metro area location at the hub of the air, highway, and transit connections in this metro area. You will be surprised to learn that two-thirds of the city of Bloomington's commercial and residential development potential is in the South Loop District, and that's why it's so important for us. On the next page, when you have limited resources available, it's important to leverage to the maximum the resources that already exist. And that is what we feel we can do in South Loop. There are six primary advantages in that district that can be leveraged without any additional investment. I'm moving on to the diagram that shows that the real estate value will quadruple in this district in the next 40 years. We are preparing in Bloomington a district plan to tell the city how to accelerate the development and job potential for the district, leveraging off of our existing assets. The plan says that the existing value of the district, which is $1.1 billion, that's the real estate value in the district, can be increased four times to $4.9 billion in 2050, and it can be doubled in the next 10 years if we follow a plan to maximize the development in the district. The Lindau Lane project is specifically designed to leverage jobs. The idea of economic development is not just a label for this project, it's what our consultant designed the project to do. One example of that is there's a $137 million project ready to proceed, a Radisson Blue Hotel on the south end of the Mall of America, and that is just an example of the development potential that we see in the near future. Employment, the next diagram illustrates that there are 26,000 jobs in the South Loop District today. In 10 years, we believe that that can be increased to nearly 35,000 jobs, and by 2050, doubled to 53,000 jobs in the district. Shane is going to tell you about the five segments of the project on the next diagram.
Well, starting with the slide that says Lindau Corridor Projects, there's five subcomponents of this project. To orient yourself, Lindau Lane is along the north side of the Mall of America and currently does not extend east of the Mall of America. And so that slide has the five sub-projects on it. If you flip to the next slide, each slide has a project associated with it. The first one, traveling from west to east along Lindau Lane, is a safety improvement. If you note, today you are not able to take a right turn from southbound Trunk Highway 77 to go into the mall at Nordstrom's, and that is the city's highest accident intersection now because people are willfully violating that move, taking that right turn into Nordstrom's, and this project would fix that. Going to the next slide, the lowering of Lindau Lane is a key component to the Mall of America's expansion plan. As part of the city approval in 2006, Mayo is the next phase of Mall of America Phase 2. The Mall of America will not be expanding in one fell swoop as was originally anticipated. You're going to see much more of a phased approach, and up to somewhere between 3.5 and 5.6 million square feet of additional development. The lowering of Lindau Lane is a $32 million project, and we have two-thirds of that being identified today. Going on to the next slide, and I believe your packets are in black and white, but if they were in color, you'd be able to see a small label that says Mayo Gateway, positioned over Lindau Lane, just north of the Mall of America, and to the east of IKEA. That will be the next phase of Mall of America Phase 2, adding on to the two sub-phases that have happened already, that being IKEA and the Radisson Blue Hotel that we spoke of just a moment ago. You can see on the next slide the mall's full Phase 2 integration that integrates in the various other portions of Phase 2 that would have occurred, those being the Mayo Gateway. Fast Pro Shops has signed a letter of intent with the Mall of America, as has Great Wolf Water Park Hotel. There'll be over a million additional square feet of retail development, as well as office and other hotel space. You can see on the next slide, this is just a perspective put together by the mall's architect of how the Mayo building would sit on top of Lindau Lane. Traveling further east along Lindau Lane, a portion of Lindau that doesn't exist today, east of 24th Avenue on the east side of the Mall of America, this is a development spine that will catalyze development along that corridor. It will connect the Mall of America and Bloomington Central Station, which is a large transit-oriented development centered around one of the four light rail stations that exist in the South Loop District. We'll use stormwater infiltration for groundwater recharge in that area, have on-street parking. The city in 2010 invested $10 million to purchase parcels needed for that expansion, of which we will create some development parcels and recover a portion of that money. That subportion of the project to extend Lindau Lane from 24th to 30th is about an $11 million project. Going to the slide that says 30th Avenue Complete Street, this is a connector along the west side of the Bloomington Central Station transit-oriented development. It's a connector for them. It will also be a complete street and have stormwater infiltration. It also borders a semiconductor manufacturer called Polar Semiconductor. You may not have heard about them, but they're in the process of seeking approval from their parent company for an expansion of 300 jobs in Minnesota at an average salary of about $60,000. These would keep the jobs in Minnesota and in the country outside of that, and we're working with them on various economic development proposals, but this complete street would also assist them to defray some of those costs. Last part of the project is continuing Lindau Lane into the Bloomington Central Station development for pedestrians and bikes. It would connect to the light rail station that development is centered around, and also the Bloomington Central Station Park. This is about a $500,000 project. Just to note that these projects are ready to go. They can start in 2011. Engineering is underway, and the environmental approvals have begun.
So on the one side, you've got the Mall of America and Mall of America Phase 2. On the other side is the Bloomington Central Station development that is a local company, McGuff. And the Lindau Lane corridor connects the two together. Our consultants tell us that connection is important to accelerating development in the district. McGuff has an approved plan. You see the rendering of it here. The Health Partners headquarters is already located there. McGuff has built 250 condo buildings. Building out their plan would add office space, hotel, and additional residential. So the next slide summarizes for you the project benefits. I'm not going to read those to you. The slide after that, the subdivided Bloomington commercial industrial dollar bill, is important for you to understand. The state is an important partner and stakeholder in our commercial industrial development, and this dollar bill begins to illustrate it. For every dollar that in property tax that a commercial industrial development pays in Bloomington, 27% goes to the state of Minnesota. Only 12 cents goes to the city of Bloomington. So in some ways, you are a partner that is more than three times as interested in commercial industrial development in Bloomington as the city of Bloomington is. And in addition, each one of the developments we're talking about has implications for sales taxes to the state as well as income taxes to the state. So we come to you asking for this investment as a partner who is very interested in our success. So to summarize, three points. This project is designed to create employment. It was designed that way from the beginning to leverage employment. Second, it is ready to proceed. And third is that it takes advantage of the considerable investment in state and regional assets in the area by leveraging those existing assets to create the maximum amount of economic activity that we can for Bloomington, the region, and for the state of Minnesota. So we would appreciate your support for this Lindau Lane project.
Representative Scalzi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess this question is more for you, Mr. Chair. As we go through this, and we're kind of running out of time here, I'm wondering what the process is going to be for other projects that are currently in bill form, because much like this one, I have a couple of bills in for that would create employment and relieve traffic congestion and economic activity. So I'm kind of wondering what will be the next process after we do, we're going through this bill, but what is the process moving forward for the compatible other projects that may go along with this?
Well, Representative Scalzi, on a lot of the bills that have been introduced, they've been sent to a finance committee. If it was, for instance, a trail, it probably went to Environment Finance. I would assume that the Environment Finance Committee would talk about these projects and send them on to this committee. When we get them, then we'll have hearings on them. Some bills have come directly to this committee, and at some point in the future, we'll hear those also. So that would be the process right now.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Is there a Mr. Melander and Mr. Hunter here that wanted? How about one of you come up and say what you want to say rather than both of you? I think you're going to say the same thing. And please make it short.
I will be rather short. And thank you for the opportunity to speak. For those of you who don't know me, my name is Steve Hunter. I'm the Secretary Treasurer of the Minnesota AFL-CIO. We like to say we represent 300,000 working people across the state. However, unfortunately, at this time, a number of our 300,000 members are without work. Primarily, those people are in the construction trades. The heaviest job loss in this recession by sector has been in the area of construction. Therefore, Mr. Chairman, we want to thank you for bringing this bill forward and let you know we support this bill. This bill will put people to work in private sector jobs building public infrastructure. It will put the construction trades, a number of our people, back to work. Traditionally, when we have come out of a recession, it has been because construction has led the way. Specifically, the Minnesota AFL-CIO has taken positions supporting the proposals brought forth by Minsky and the University of Minnesota in this bill. I know from experience that most of these projects are shovel-ready. We urge you to pass the bill sooner rather than later so that as soon as the ground thaws out, we can get these projects underway. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Hunter. For my 2 cents worth is that it's debatable as to many people here on opposite sides of the fence as to whether or not Capital Investment Committee passes bills and creates jobs. That's debatable. But one thing is for certain, the construction industry in Minnesota isn't in a recession, it's in a depression. I spent my whole life in the construction industry. I remember years back in the 80s when hardly anybody was working. It's not fun. So whatever we can do from this end, within reason, we certainly will help.
Mr. Chair, respecting the fact that there's a debate about whether it creates jobs, and I did not quote the numbers which have been quoted before, which were given to us by private sector analysis. However, I think you can look at it this way. Maybe those jobs exist, but nobody's doing them right now because there's no projects to work on. Thank you.
Good answer. City of St. Paul, and then Ramsey. Introduce yourself for the tape. And
Mr. Chair and members, thank you. My name is Mike Hamm. I'm the Director of Parks and Recreation for the City of St. Paul. I'm with John Riegel, who will introduce himself later, and we're here in support of the regional ballpark initiative in downtown St. Paul. You have materials in your packet. They look like this, and I'll try to be very succinct and to the point about the project and then stand for questions. Our request for this project was $27 million. We're very happy that the governor's bill recognizes the importance of this project and includes $20 million, and we look forward to working with the legislature and the rest of our partners to see this project through. Very importantly, it includes and will leverage $10 million of support and investment from our partner, the St. Paul Saints, and an additional $10 million in investment locally from the City of St. Paul for this project. The project itself is a 7,000-seat regional ballpark. We have a very prominent and primary tenant in the St. Paul Saints. They occupy about one-third of the use of this facility by the data that we have at our old facility. That is about 60 dates a year. The other 140-plus dates will be filled by other regional activities. This project will very much serve families from the entire region and across the state. The second page of our handout on one side includes a letter of support from the Minnesota State High School League. On the other side includes a sampling of recent communities that have been customers of ours in St. Paul for our regional ballpark. This ballpark will be publicly owned by the City of St. Paul, but it's something that certainly can't happen without support for the, from the greater region, including the private sector. Our existing regional facility at Midway Stadium is reaching the end of its service life. We've, in St. Paul, been the home of a regional baseball facility continuously dating back to the 1920s. The facility we have right now in terms of basic asset management is both inadequate and outdated, and simply stated, any further investment in that facility would be throwing good money after bad money to keep that limping along. This site is the site you see on the map is really exceptional in terms of connection to transit and connectivity. It is at the point where a number of interstate highways, state highways, and regional trails come together. It is also at the end of the new Central Corridor light rail line, and when this project is funded, we'll literally have a Twins ballpark on one end of light rail and a regional ballpark in downtown St. Paul at the other end of light rail. It's also an exceptional fit for the vitality that's happening presently in downtown St. Paul and Lower Town. We've had a tremendous amount of community support around that. And this project is also timed and poised to move forward with the tremendous amount of investment that's happening in the east area of downtown St. Paul, where we're going to have Lafayette Bridge construction, where we've broken ground on the Union Depot, where we're working on light rail and the operations and maintenance facility that will support that. I've been doing this work a long time, and if we are going to have regional facilities and regional ballparks, this site, from my estimation, is quite simply the best possible site we could locate a facility like this. The Saints have been a great partner in terms of reaching out to the community and gaining support, and as I've indicated, they have agreed to invest $10 million in this facility. Speaking a little bit more about the community support for this project is John Riedel.
Okay, excuse me just for 1 second. I have to be in rules in 4 minutes. The Vice Chair has to be in rules in 4 minutes. Representative Hausman is going to take over. We are supposed to quit at 4:15, but if the members don't mind, we'll go till 4:30 because we're so very close to finishing. A lot of people have planned on being here. So go ahead and continue.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Madam Chair.
Welcome.
And members of the committee, my name is John Riedel. I am the Director of Risk Management and Local Government Affairs for Securian Financial Group, including its subsidiary Minnesota Life here in St. Paul. And I also represent the St. Paul Area Chamber of Commerce and its 1,500 member companies in St. Paul and the East Metro community. And as Mike said, I would say that the private sector, the Chamber of Commerce in our community fully supports this initiative. I've been doing economic development and around economic development projects in St. Paul for 25 years, and I can say that there's always something or somebody that's in opposition to a project, and with this one, there literally is not. And in downtown St. Paul, especially in Lower Town, we have a rather eclectic bunch of folks. We have large businesses, small businesses, we have nonprofits, we have artist corners, we have communities, we have a farmers market, we have a district council. Everybody is on board and welcomes and wants this regional ballpark in St. Paul. And so on behalf of the business community, we thank you for your support. We are completely behind this. We look forward to partnering with the city and its main tenant, the Saints, on this regional ballpark initiative. Thank you.
Carl. Yeah,
just a quick question. Some of us were here when we were dealing with the Twins ballpark, and of course this is a smaller scale, but how are things like the concessions and potential naming rights being handled? Who would benefit?
Mr. Riegel.
I think that's where the private sector will be stepping in on that. We see that as an opportunity to to further become partners in this. We know right now that the Saints are committing $10 million to this project. The city is committing $10 million on the acquisition. Hopefully the state contributes as well. The private sector has contributed some to this point to help get the project going and off the ground, but we see opportunities for continued investment and partnership throughout and during operations.
I guess the question I have, and I have no idea what the value, let's say naming rights would be or the income from the concessions, which one of those entities benefits then? I understand what each one is excuse me, putting in, but my interest is then who gets the offset of the concessions and the naming rights? Is it the Saints? Is it the city? Is it any of your other partners?
I think that's Mr. Hum.
Madam Chair, Representative Carlson, we have done a good deal of work to get this project ready to go, and agreeing to terms, general terms, with the Saints is part of that discussion, and what we've worked out with the Saints is they have the ability to facilitate the concession operation and facilitate the naming rights for the facility. And the proceeds from that is, in our agreement to those terms, is what makes possible their investment, a portion of the $10 million that will come from the Saints to make this project possible.
Okay, Madam Chair, then the bottom line is that their $10 million investment is offset by the revenue from concessions and the naming rights, so they're not necessarily long-term putting $10 million in. They'll recapture a part of that, whatever your agreement is, and I have no idea what your projections are, but just interested because that was a big part, members, of the discussion about the Twins ballpark and who benefited from at least those two issues, and there may be other revenue sources that we could talk about later. Thank you.
And I think, Mr. Hum, that would be good advice for you to take back to have further discussion, because what he points out is that's always the issue that gets raised, is that a real number. So it's just, I think I heard that as advice to the project.
Madam Chair, we will follow up on that. Thank you.
Any further questions? If not, thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you.
City of Ramsey, Kurt Ulrich.
Madam Chair, members, my name is Bob Ramsey, the mayor of the city of Ramsey. And in respect for your time, I'd like to just turn this over to Kurt Ulrich, our city administrator. He can give you the meat and potatoes of what we're looking for.
Welcome to the committee. Identify yourself.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Kurt Ulrich, city administrator of the city of Ramsey. We are grateful and request your support for the $4 million that's included in the governor's bonding bill. That's a part of the $12.5 million in the transit project request under the MEC Council. This project will be a sound investment for economic development. It was originally planned from 1999 with the North Star commuter line to be one of the original stations, but was left out of the initial development and now is included and supported as an infill station for the line, which will add 10% ridership to the line, increase ridership, and make the line more cost effective moving forward. The city has already completed a number of transit improvements in the area, including 590-stall parking ramp. We have federal grant monies to expand that ramp by 200 stalls, so we are preparing for the completion of the rail station. We currently operate an express bus service out of the station area, and that would be stopped once the rail station is in place. The rail, with the existing investment of $317 million, will be the most effective way for mass transit from this area, and that's why we're requesting state funding for the development of the station. The station itself is a $3.2 million project. The funding, $13.2 million project, the funding would be split among various agencies, including federal, the County Transit Investment Board, the MEC Council, Anoka County Regional Rail Authority, and the City of Ramsey, as well as the state bonding money. So we're asking your support because this project will be constructed in 2011. It'll mean jobs during construction. It will mean economic development and jobs long-term because it'll spur the development of this area. The city, this is one stop on the North Star Line that has plenty of vacant land for development, and it is in a prime position to build out and create jobs both in office, residential, as well as commercial activity. So with that, I just ask your support, and there's more information in the handouts, but we think this project will be a good investment moving forward. Thank you.
It appears there are no questions, but this is good information, and you have a clear sense of the project here. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you.
University of Minnesota. I think Minskew is in the audience, but only for questions. Is that correct? Do I understand? University of Minnesota.
Madam Chair, my colleague from Minskew is joining the table with me to help save you time. So Kathleen O'Brien from the University of Minnesota, Vice President for Operations, and
Brian Yolitz, the Associate Vice Chancellor for Facilities for the Minnesota State College and University System.
Madam Chair and committee members, thank you so much for your time this afternoon, and thank you for the past investments that the legislature and state have made in the University of Minnesota. We have improved classroom environments, strengthened research environments, a safer campus, greater energy conservation and operational savings across the state of Minnesota because of the investment of past bonding bills, and we're grateful. Today we're here to talk about the governor's bonding recommendation, and there are three projects for the University of Minnesota included in the governor's bill that is before you. The first is the Central Corridor LRT Laboratory Mitigation Project. We have estimated that there is about a $25 million cost to relocate and upgrade research laboratories along the Washington Avenue corridor. The Washington Avenue corridor on the East Bank campus of the University of Minnesota is truly the state of Minnesota's research corridor. There's 80 laboratories with over 300 pieces of sensitive research equipment. Essentially, the University of Minnesota has asked the state to share in that cost of moving those laboratories and providing the protection to those research labs. This request came out of the negotiations and the agreement that was crafted last spring and summer between the Metropolitan Council and the University of Minnesota. Governor Pawlenty committed to supporting this a split of costs, and that commitment was reconfirmed by Governor Dayton, and that's why it is in the bill that is before you. To give you a sense of the kind of research that is protected, the NMR, Nuclear Magnetic Resonance Facility in Hassamo Hall, supports $110 million annually of grant funding that comes into the state of Minnesota. Over 200 researchers across 22 university departments utilize this laboratory. They conduct cutting-edge research in cancer, AIDS, heart disease, muscular dystrophy, paralysis, diabetes, stroke, infectious disease, drug discovery, bone disease, and Alzheimer's, certainly the critical health care issues facing us today. In addition, the facility user base has served researchers from many other academic institutions, Hamline, Harvard, Minnesota State University at Mankato, Penn State, St. Cloud State, the U.S. Military Academy at West Point, the University of California at San Diego, and industry including 3M, Cargill, and Medtronic, and others outside the state of Minnesota. So a very critical facility that would not be able to operate during the construction of the Central Corridor or after the operations of the Central Corridor begin unless it was moved. And that's really, we're asking the state to pay for half of that and be the partner of the university. The second building is the Physics Nanotechnology Building, and this is a request for $51.3 million. In last year's bonding bill, the state awarded the university $4 million in design money. That money has been put to good use, and construction on the Physics Nano building could begin this summer. Physics research currently is hampered by an obsolete facility that's almost 80 years old, and it's most cost-effective to build a new research facility. The old physics building on the mall just really could not accommodate new physics research. Physics is a high-demand program at the U that is required by 48 undergraduate programs. 3,000 students take physics courses a year. It's an essential component of our STEM educational program for the state of Minnesota. That's science, technology, engineering, and math programs. The university is one of the top 10 schools in the nation in terms of federal support for physics and nanotechnology research. In 1 year, the Nanofabrication Center serves the needs of 250 users, including faculty at the U, faculty at other institutions, and businesses, at this point 24 nationally. The new building will hold the research arm of the physics department and the Center for Nanostructure Applications. This facility is really necessary to grow research and meet increased industry demands, and it has the support of the Minnesota nano biotech industry. It's important to the state to capture and attract the growth of this industry. And then our third request is for HEPR dollars, and it's a $35 million project. The University of Minnesota has literally over $100 million ready to go on our higher ed asset preservation list of projects, but recognizing that we were really looking in this bill for crucial projects and projects that were ready to be constructed this summer, we have focused on two items. One is to upgrade all of the elevators across the university system to meet the new state code requirements that need to be met by 2012, and that's $23 million of our request. And then the other $12 million is to address water infiltration projects, and anyone who's lived in Minnesota know what we mean about water in seeping in the roof through ice dams in the basement. Just think about large campuses and the kind of water issues we might have. So these projects are in Morris, Duluth, the Twin Cities, and at research centers and field stations across the state. In closing, this request will produce jobs in the long term in the research lab mitigation and the physics nano building, and jobs in the short term, almost 2,800 private industry construction jobs. And we appreciate your hearing us today, and we'd love to have you come look at some of the projects that have been recently built with state bonding, but also look at the needs we have for these projects, Madam Chair.
The other gentleman is going to ask you.
Okay. Go ahead and introduce yourself for the table.
Charles, my name is Brian Yolitz. I'm the Associate Vice Chancellor for Facilities for the Minnesota State College and University System. Very mindful of the committee's time and very appreciative of your recommendation by the governor, as well as the recommendations found in House File 206. As Commissioner Showalter noted, there's $127 million worth of requirements being satisfied by the recommendation. $30 million address HEPR, or Higher Education Asset Preservation Replacement work, that'll touch projects at 30 of our campuses across the state. An additional $97 million represents 8 capital projects at 7 colleges and 1 university within our system. All of these projects were either vetoed or reduced during the FY 2010 budget process. The projects focus on improving facility spaces for the more than 33,000 full-time equivalent students that attend our campuses at the 8 7 colleges and 1 university. The work reflects the priorities of our Board of Trustees committed to taking care of the facilities and infrastructure we have in place, as well as supporting the educational needs of the workforce of tomorrow. The projects are shovel ready, and I know that's an important thing, ready to begin immediately complete design work or start construction, specifically focused on once underway accomplishing some 2,500 jobs for engineers, architects, and the construction trades that we heard about just recently. We're very mindful of the need to execute funds offered to the system, and we're very proud of our track record over the years. The 6 construction projects appropriated in FY10 are well under construction, phased to be completed here by the end of the year. And the two design projects that we had have positioned projects at Alexandria and Normandale for immediate execution should funding become available this spring or this summer. Finishing projects and financially closing out others that were appropriated earlier is a top priority for us. And our commitment to you is to execute the projects if funding funds become available just as quickly as we've done in the past. So in closing, again, very appreciative and grateful to the governor and to this committee for understanding and supporting our capital requirements, and look forward to you, just as our colleague here from the University of Minnesota is visiting our campuses and understanding what we do and seeing the great things that our campuses are doing. I thank you for the opportunity and look forward to answering any questions you may have.
Representative Carlson.
Yeah, just a quick one, maybe just a yes or no, but I know that the campuses were brought in recently to do their capital presentations. Some of them are on the list here already. Did the scope of any of those projects change? Are the dollar amounts still what they were?
Chair, scope has remained the same. We have some projects that have been in the system for some time that are being prepared for the FY12 bonding requests or capital requests, and those reflect some changes in scope and size.
But Mr. Chairman, the ones that are before us, there's no change.
That's correct.
Okay, that was the question.
Thank you. We have Representative Bills and then Representative Lanning, and you've got a minute and a half, and the sergeant is going to kick us out of here because somebody else needs a room.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To the University of Minnesota, your HEPR funding in Subdivision 2 of the bill, the $35 million, would that all be allocated on the Twin Cities campus then?
No, those dollars are spread across the system and across the state of Minnesota.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Lanning.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We don't have time to get into this today, but I have a number of questions with regard to the light rail mitigation. We've had a little experience with that, Representative Hausman and I and Representative Carlson, and Vice President O'Brien, we need to have some conversation about that.
We'd be happy to do so, Mr. Chair, Representative.
Thank you.
And then my apology, Representative Hausman.
Well, and Mr. Chair, I think we probably should just acknowledge the first appearance before the committee of the new Al Johnson. that position has always been one we've depended on, so we're looking forward to getting to know that.
And then my apologies to the two that didn't quite make it through in time. It's my fault. I accept full responsibility. We will bring this back up in the future when we have other bills to let people, obviously we didn't have any time for anyone to speak against. I'm sure there aren't probably more than two people that would speak against the governor's bill. So the chair is going to lay House File 607 over for consideration. We're adjourned.